Kiss me quick, honey, can't stay long. By this time tomorrow, I'll be good as gone.
Hey there, I'm Joe Kendrick, welcoming you to the second episode of our two podcasts on American Aquarium. As we go deeper into our conversation with frontman BJ Barham and spend some time with music artist and longtime American Aquarium fan Tyler Boone along the way. We'll get to more music from the new album Lamentations, like the song you're hearing now, Before the Dogwood Blooms. In the first episode of this series, you got to hear about how BJ Barham turns uncomfortable conversations about the dark parts of Southern history into songs, about racial and class divides, how influential Tom Petty and Bruce Springsteen are to his music, and about how things stand for American Aquarium and in the music business more generally during the coronavirus pandemic. But we left a lot on the table, including much of my conversation with Tyler Boone, who has a new single out, and lots more from BJ Barham, including producer Shooter Jennings as the band's Bigfoot, and more insight into the culture and politics of the South. All that and more on this episode of Southern Songs and Stories. And we both know the rent don't pay itself. Deep down I know that I'm above this, old enough to know better, too young to quit. So I'll see you around this town in a week or two. Running low on money, honey, and the bills are coming due. Just need a couple of days. Dogwood blooms. 28 miles from the state line. Blue lights coming in hot behind. They got me once, babe, and I ain't going back. So when that siren sounds, throw that hammer down and watch it all fade to black. Kiss me quick, honey, can't stay long. By this time tomorrow, I'll be good as gone.
Southern Songs and Stories is produced in partnership with Grassroots Radio, WNCW, and Osiris Media at osirispod.com and is available wherever you get your podcasts and at wncw.org. One easy and helpful way to spread awareness of the artists featured here, their music, and the series is to subscribe to this podcast and give it a good rating and a comment on the platforms where you listen to your podcasts. This is Southern Songs and Stories, the music of the South, and the artists who make it. Fans for Racial Equity, or FREE, is a community of Phish and Jam Band fans that promote racial equity and respect for differences within the Phish and greater Jam Band community and beyond. FREE strives to make the community a more welcoming space for people of all races and ethnicities. Recent FREE activities included tabling inside Phish shows, working with music venues to implement racial equity training for staff, hosting an all-day virtual retreat that included a public panel highlighting the experiences of fans of color in the Phish community, and raising almost $5,000 for the racial justice organization Color of Change. Upcoming activities include mobilizing the community to support Black Lives Matter organizing and to advocate that venues and bands use their influence to enact changes around policing in communities that fans visit to see shows, building out intervention training for fans, and creating videos for fans to tell their stories. You can find out more about Fans for Racial Equity on their Facebook page, on Twitter, and Instagram, or by email at fans, that's P-H-A-N-S, for racial equity at gmail.com.
When you're in LA, is it obvious to everybody that you're from the South?
Yeah, so I have like a record label now called Artist Formula Record Group, which is part of like an artist services company. And we do a lot of different things, like Spotify is like our biggest thing. And then we'll do YouTube and Instagram. We have all these cool programs and stuff. But anyway, what I'm saying is I get on phone calls like all the time. Like I had a phone call right before this, and I've had, there's one band we're working with. They're like everyone over there is pop. You know what I mean? This one guy on the phone was like, "Hey man, are you from Arkansas or something?" I was like, "What?" I was like, "I'd prefer if you said I was from Charleston or, you know, from South Carolina." I don't know why Arkansas got put into it, but everyone always I guess I have like a small accent sometimes and I don't even realize it. So yeah, for sure. Everyone's always like, "You're not from here, are you?" Or, you know, I always say, "Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir." Or, you know, it's definitely California and I'm not in the South anymore. So it's funny. And traffic sucks. So. I feel like maybe there might be a stigma too, because people assume maybe that accent was with certain things, which it isn't. You know what I mean? Because there's amazing people in the South. But yeah, I feel like sometimes too, when I lived in Nashville, my accent got way stronger. So my roommate was from like Monroe, Georgia or something. And so he had a big accent. And so maybe it just kind of carried on. But, you know, I've had a lot of people I hear just kind of, you know, I guess I think it's cute.
That's Tyler Boone, who also has his own brand of bourbon, which is made in partnership with Striped Pig Distillery in his hometown of Charleston, South Carolina. BJ Barham does not shy away from a debate, but he never enters one without knowing what the other side's viewpoint is all about. It's the lawyer in him. After all, he fully intended to go to law school when he was in college at NC State. In the first episode on American Aquarium, he spoke at length about his song A Better South and how it was the awkward conversation that every progressive Southerner has had in their family sometime or another. I went on to say that, as a lifelong Southerner, I knew well that kind of angst that can come with reconciling the legacy of the Civil War, both with being on the wrong side of it, but also being on the losing side. I also asked if he had witnessed any underlying prejudice against Southerners, and if he had ever felt that kind of chip on his shoulder when, like he had mentioned earlier, someone from Brooklyn wanted to tell him what is wrong about the South.
Yeah, you know, I've been able to change my mindset throughout my life, but I have not been able to change the way I talk. I still have a very distinct Southern accent. So anytime I get above the D.C. area, it is very clear that I am a Southern person. And so a lot of people, and I use it to my advantage. A lot of people think when they go into a conversation with a Southern person that we're going to be ignorant, that we're going to be closed-minded, that we're going to be racist, misogynistic, bigoted hate mongers. And I like to come out of the gate and use that to my advantage, because the only thing worse than being an ignorant Southerner is being an educated Southerner. You do not want to get into a conversation with an educated Southerner, because we are just as stubborn as the ignorant Southerners, but we also have facts to back up the reason we believe the things we believe. And I've had those conversations traveling the country. You know, the first thing somebody says, "Oh, you're from the South," you know, "Ew, ew." And I'm like, "You haven't spent much time down there, have you?" You know, your music is copying everything that built the South. Your food is copying everything that my grandmother cooks on Sunday. But for some reason, you're talking down to me because of the way I speak. I had a chip on my shoulder growing up just because I was taught wrong. The public school system in North Carolina failed me on the causes of the Civil War. And what happened after the Civil War. Reconstruction was taught completely different than how I've learned it in my 20s and 30s. You know, going back and actually reading the history of Reconstruction, realizing that it wasn't a Democratic Republican thing. It was just every white person was racist.
It's fairly biblical in a way, you know, the sins of the father passing down through the generations until there's a repentance.
For sure. And it's one of those things where my dad is not a bad person. My dad is not a hateful person. My dad was taught to hate certain people by my grandfather. And my grandfather was taught to hate certain people by his father. And then the grandfather before that, my great-great-grandfather, you know, owned people. It's not that far removed. You know, my family, if I'd have stuck around my hometown of Reidsville, I would have been a seventh-generation tobacco farmer. And tobacco farmers in the South, you know, especially at a certain point, were using the labor of people that were bought and traded, and my family is no different. And I can admit that. I can openly say that I am sorry for the sins and transgressions of my family, but knowing that I'm doing something about it lets me sleep a little bit easier at night, knowing that that it ends with me, that kind of prejudice and that racism that is instilled in children at an early age in the South stops here. It stops with me. And the only reason that I was able to get away from it is because I left my hometown. I traveled. I got to see the hypocrisy in the things I was taught as a child. I got to see that all of these stereotypes weren't true. And the only reason my parents and their parents and their parents believed them is because they never got out of their hometown to disprove them. Travel is the number one way to kill bigotry. You know, travel the country and meet people, especially in my line of work, where I'm meeting people from every walk of life, shaking hands and coming together for music, coming together in a unified spirit to celebrate one thing. It disproved half the things I was taught as a child. And I really do think that if you would just let racist Southern teenagers travel the world for a year, they would come back not being as racist as they were when they left. It also helps that I was able to go and get a secondary education. A lot of the South, their education stops at, especially when it comes to world education, stops at the 12th grade. They might go to trade school or community college to learn something else. But, you know, I got to go to a 4-year university and I majored in history and political science. And so I was really had to deal with a lot of the miseducation I got as a Southern student head on. My freshman and sophomore year were some of the most eye-opening years because I got to see just how wrong I was about all the things I believed in. And, you know, I think it's important. Education, my parents, I don't know if they realized what they were going to do to me, but they always taught me that education was the key out of my hometown. And so when I left my hometown, not only did I get an education, book learning, but I also got a world education that has made me a better human being and made me strive to be a better human being every day.
Yeah, we have so many of the same intentions. We have so much in common, and we're going about it in completely different ways. And honestly, there's a ton of misinformation and disinformation going on, which makes coming to the table a lot harder nowadays with some of these conversations that you're having, because they tend to be one-sided, especially when the water gets really muddy with all of this misinformation and disinformation, especially, I think.
Yeah, that's the problem with today is both sides are fueled with kind of half facts or zero facts at all. And I think that's a dangerous, dangerous, dangerous game to play. But, you know, when I sit down with somebody, you know, it's always a fun game to talk about what you have in common. And what people don't realize is no matter who you're talking to, I bet you money, especially being a Southern North Carolina person, you're going to be able to talk about food. You're going to be able to talk about college football. You're going to be able to talk about so many other things that you have in common. But yeah, I might disagree with where you think tax allotment should go or your fiscal policy or whether or not the role you see religion playing in politics. But at the end of the day, we have way more in common than the media that either side wants to admit that we have in common. You know, the only way politicians get ahead in the world and the only way these media groups get ahead of the world is keeping us at each other's throat, keeping us divided. They win. You know, if they keep everyone split in half, there's no way one voice can emerge and take down the establishment. And, you know, they're winning right now. This is I've only been on this earth for 36 years, and this is the most divisive I've ever seen our country. You know, you can't start a conversation or a discussion without it turning into an argument very quickly.
Our name's been on that mailbox the last 100 years. We're the walking definition of blood, sweat, and tears. If you ask them who we are, they'll tell you mean and surly. We're the keepers of tradition, that bright leaf and burly. We get low down, we get high as a kite. Lord, I wish I may, Lord, I wish I might be saved.
town, USA. Greetings from Tobacco Town, USA. I've been wandering these roads since I was 3 years old, watching the men I thought were gods turning green leaves into gold. Now the fields, they all lay empty, curing barns are growing cold. All the while, another cash crop just begging to be sold. Yeah, we got the infrastructure, Lord knows we got the will. But a solution to a problem doesn't pay that problem's bills. So they'll keep calling it illegal, keep pumping us with bills. Tell Roosevelt what the Bible Belt went and did to his new deal. Yeah, we get low down, we get high as kite. Lord, I wish I may, Lord, I wish I might be singing this song when I hit the pearly gates. Greetings from Tobacco Town, USA. Greetings from Tobacco Town, USA. Be it paper, oil, coal, or steel, if the factory work ain't left yet, bet a dollar that it will. We redefine resilience, we'll make it somehow. But if God was gonna save us, he'd have done it by now. If your God was gonna save us, he'd have done it by now. So we get low down, we get high as a kite. Lord, I wish I may, Lord, I wish I might be singing this song when I hit the pearly gates. Greetings from Tobacco Town, USA. Greetings from Tobacco Town, USA.
Towards the end of our call, BJ Barham mentioned his producer, Shooter Jennings, and I realized that I had skipped over that question in my notes after getting so deep into topics like Southern accents and worldviews. American Aquarium went through another lineup change just last year, with Shane Baker remaining as lead guitarist, while new drummer Ryan Van Fleet, bassist Alden Hedges, and pedal steel player Neil Jones came in, and keyboard player Rhett Huffman was added, bringing the roster up to 6 members from 5. Barham went on to describe how the original plan to take his new record in to record with a different producer in Memphis, Tennessee, fell through.
It was the, you know, the classic cliche, you know, one door closes, one door opens, you know. We could have never made this record with anybody other than Shooter. Shooter brought so much to the table as far as I don't think I've ever had a producer believe as much as Shooter did. I've had friends who produced my records, and I've had people that dug the records, but Shooter was like a member of the band for 10 days. You know, Shooter was so excited about the project, and it was kind of a unshakable excitement, which is exactly what you hear, like fantasy stories of working with producers. It's kind of like Bigfoot. Like, I've never seen Bigfoot, but I've heard stories about Bigfoot, and everyone wants to write articles about Bigfoot. The same thing as working about a producer who is just as excited about making the record as you are. Shooter's Bigfoot. Shooter's our Bigfoot, man. We got in the studio, and for 10 days, he was the 7th member of the band. He was there throwing ideas at the wall and taking chances with us, and it was exciting. It never got boring. And there's a reason we were able to track most of that record in 4 days. We got 10 songs done in 4 days, and we spent the other 4 days, you know, adding stuff, like making weird noises into microphones, seeing what was sonically what we could change. But the core of that, the drums, the bass, the electric guitar, the pedal steel guitar, the organ, the piano, was all done in 4 days. And that is a testament to just how exciting of an environment Shooter created for us. Like, he made it a creative's dream. Like, there was no ego. There was no negativity. It was everybody who had an idea got their idea heard. We tried the idea, and if the idea worked, it stayed. If it didn't work, we tried to come up with something better. And there was this unlimited well of positivity and creativity. And it's just, I've never been in that situation in the studio before. For listeners who aren't aware, the studio is an extremely expensive place to be. You're paying by the hour. You're paying the engineer who's sitting there turning the knobs by the hour. You're paying the producer by the hour. You're paying your band by the hour. So there is this kind of weight over the session of, okay, we need to get this done as soon as possible so it doesn't break the bank. We can stay under budget, blah, blah, blah. And nobody, that never crossed anybody's mind. The only thing we thought of the entire time, from the time we set up our gear to the time we broke it down, was this kind of beautiful oasis of creativity. And that's a big testament to the kind of environment Shooter creates.
Anybody on a wish list of who you'd like to work with?
Oh man, there's a lot. Obviously Dave Cobb is the big Americana producer now, and he's doing this stuff out of RCA. I would love to work with Dave one day. You know, Mike Mogus out in Omaha, he did all those early Bright Eyes records, all that Saddle Creek stuff from the early 2000s. That was Mike Mogus produced right there in Omaha. I would like to work with him one day. Sturgill Simpson would be a great person to work with. He seems to be one of those guys that really has a foot in the rock world and a foot in the country world. And that's kind of our wheelhouse. I would love to work with Sturgill one day. I'm excited to work with somebody that I'm a fan of, and that also believes in the songs that I'm writing. Kind of that codependency of, you know, I dig you, you dig me, let's make something really cool. Those are the people that, you know, and I'm lucky, you know, 15 years in to be able to surround myself with that. You know, some people don't have an option of working with really great producers, and we're very fortunate to be at a level to where we get to really pick who we work with. So yeah, those are my three. Those would be Dave Cobb, Mike Mogus, and Sturgill would be the three that I would really like to see myself making a record with before my career comes to an end.
Excellent. BJ Barham here on Southern Songs and Stories. I really appreciate you being on the show.
Man, thanks a ton for having me. 'Cause I'm in it for the long haul.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you might tell a friend about us here at Southern Songs and Stories. You can subscribe to this series on your podcast platform of choice, and it helps even more when you give it a good rating and a review. Great ratings and reviews especially will make Southern Songs and Stories and the artists it profiles more visible to more people just like you. And it helps to spread awareness and make more people connected when you like and follow the show on our social media. You can find us on the Facebook page Southern Songs and Stories, on Twitter at South Scenes, and on Instagram at South Stories. Southern Songs and Stories is part of the podcast lineup of both Public Radio WNCW and Osiris Media, with all of the Osiris shows available at osirispod.com. You can also hear new episodes of this podcast on Bluegrass Planet Radio at bluegrassplanetradio.com. Thanks to Rhonda Chalik and to Tyler Boone for being on this series. Our theme songs are by Joshua Meng. I'm your host and producer, Joe Kendrick, and this is Southern Songs and Stories, the music of the South and the artists who make it.